Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole at TwinsTrivia.com. When I got up this morning, it was a minus 14 degrees below zero, not counting wind chill. Now, as I look out the window, the sun is shining on the bright white snow, and the temperature has risen all the way to 5 degrees. It's hardly baseball weather. But regardless, today we're going to speak with Al Red Worthington, number 6 on the Twins' all-time saves list. A right-handed pitcher, Al pitched in the majors for 14 seasons, primarily as a reliever. Al pitched in 602 games through 1,246-plus innings, only giving up 1,130 hits, while striking out 834. Al finished with a 75-82 one-loss record and a nice 3.39 ERA. Al pitched for the New York Giants, the San Francisco Giants, the Boston Red Sox, the Chicago White Sox, the Cincinnati Reds, and of course the Minnesota Twins from 1964 to 1969. So without further ado, let's speak with Al. Al, you were born in Birmingham, Alabama. Is that where you grew up?
Yes.
What sports did you play when you were growing up?
Well, in high school I played four. I played football, baseball, basketball, and ran on the track team.
I see. And what was your favorite sport?
Oh, boy. I guess basketball.
Okay.
And track, I like track too. Okay. I wasn't a very good baseball player, and I didn't like football, but I played it.
You attended and played for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Can you tell us a little bit about your collegiate sports career?
Well, I went down on a football scholarship to play at Alabama, and the first year I was there, in practice, my left arm got knocked out of joint. Cool. And so I had it operated on in December of that year, 49. I wasn't in that 48, so it was 49 that I had my operation during the holidays, Christmas holidays. And I could never get my arm over my top of my head, you know, straight up.
Mm-hmm.
So baseball season came, and I pitched, but if the catcher missed my arm right where, you know, I couldn't put it up very far. If he missed it, the second baseman and the shortstop caught it and threw it back to me.
Huh.
So I pitched that year with in that condition, and I swung the bat with one arm, so, and I got a few hits, so it,
well, that's tough going.
Yeah, after that, I went to Minnesota in 1950. So I went to Minnesota to play semi-pro ball.
I see.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I did. And so I got my arm. During the season, my arm got straight up. I got it all the way up then. But they called me back. Alabama called me back to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the baseball coach named Happy Campbell to call me. And I told him that I just now got my arm up and straight up. And he said, well, you can play in. And that's what my position was. And you can hit with your right shoulder. And I thought that was some kind of funny joke there. You can't even hit with your right shoulder only.
Uh-huh.
So I said, no, sir, I'm not going to do that. And he said, well, you come on back down and play baseball. So I went back down after my season in Minnesota. I played for Fuller, the semi-pro team there, league. So I went back to Alabama, and that was 1950. And I got married in December 1950 to my wife. She's from Fulda, Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
And so I went back to Alabama and played baseball that final year. And
Yeah. It's did you enjoy the game last night then, watching Alabama whip up on Texas?
Yeah, but it was kind of a boring game. Did you see the Alabama-Florida game?
Yes, I did, a portion of it.
That was a great game to me. And this was last night, you know, that poor Texas boy getting hurt, that was bad, you know.
Yep, yep.
So, anyway, I played baseball my senior year, but I also got married in December 1950, mm-hmm. December the 28th. And so my wife and I went back down to Alabama, and I had we lived in an apartment there. And, let's see, that's when I played my last year of baseball there.
Okay. You ended up signing, I think, with the Chicago Cubs as a free agent in June of 51. How did that come to pass?
Well, now, I signed with Nashville out of college. You see, there were about 15 scouts that watched us play every game at Alabama. Not one of them ever spoke to me. They all came, I guess, to see Frank Larry, who was a pitcher on our team, and Frank was a good pitcher, and he signed with Detroit,
mm-hmm.
and went up, and he pitched, he had a couple of 20-game years, so they didn't talk to me, but a friend of mine, after school there, he invited me to pitch for him in Birmingham for his team, and another coach on another team, after saw me pitch, I knew him from a long years ago. He invited me to go to Nashville to see if I could work out with him. So he called Larry Gifford, who's the owner of the Nashville ball team, and Larry said for me to fly down to Mobile. And of course, they paid my way and pitched batting practice, and I did. And so I pitched bat practice, and my ball went into a left-hander. And when I stood on the mound before I started, and I said, "Now, Al, if you throw too hard, they're going to call you a hot dog." So I threw medium speed, and then Nashville had mostly left-hand hitters, and then they ate in the lineup. So they hit the ball back to me, most of them, the left-hand hitters, and the ball tailed into them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back home and then went to Nashville on the way to Minnesota, going back up there to play again at Waseca. And Larry Gifford signed me up and gave me a $1,500 bonus, and he gave me $400 a month, and he gave me a fourth of my selling price if I ever got sold. So I immediately called Tennessee. They had a boy over there that was 8-0, and he was a left-hand pitcher, and I got him to go to take my place in Waseca.
Okay.
And Waseca, and then he hurt his arm up there at Waseca. I felt bad about that. So that put me in Nashville for 2 years. I won the first year. I led the league in hits, batsmen, strikeouts, walks, wild pitches, and just about everything they had there. And so I was, I don't even know what my record was there.
Well, I think I had saw that you had spent your first year in the pros at Nashville, and you finished the season with a 7-10 record.
That's right.
And then, but then, before the 52 season started, you were sent by the Cubs to the New York Giants.
Just a second, I hit another phone.
Sure. Really?
Did you hear that? That was a loom. Do you hear that?
Yeah.
That was a loom. That's my call on my cell phone.
I see.
Okay, where were we?
Well, before the 52 season started, you were sent by the Cubs to the Giants in some kind of a transaction or trade that doesn't seem to be very clearly documented. How did that happen?
Oh, well, anyway, when I was signed with Nashville, they worked with the Chicago White Sox. So at the end of the season, they didn't want me. And so I went back to Nashville again. Then Nashville started working with the Giants. So after the 1951 season with Nashville, the Giants offered me a chance to go to spring training. So I did the next year. I went to spring training with them, and they bought my contract from Nashville. And for, I think, about $25,000. And the Mr. Gilbert was true to his word. He gave me my fourth, and so I belong to the Giants now, starting 1953.
The following season in 53, you started in AAA Minneapolis with the Millers, but you were called up by the Giants in July, and you made your major league debut against the Phillies at the Polo Grounds on July the 6th.
Right.
And you pitched a complete game shutout, winning 6-0.
Right.
I think you only gave up a couple of hits that game. Can you share with us what your memories were of your first game in the big leagues?
Well, after I was called up by the Giants from Minneapolis, I got on a plane, flew up there. Nobody met me at the plane. And so the next day I was in the Giant office, and the funny thing about it, they told me to go down four doors and go downstairs and get on the train. The players on the train going to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Alabama. I've never been out of this state, and I didn't care about what other people did anyway. I didn't know anything about a subway. Now, lo and behold, I walked four doors down, and I went downstairs, and there was a train running. That was hard to believe. But I got on that, and there was the players, and going to Philadelphia. So I went with them, of course, and then I started my first game on that July the 6th, you said,
mm-hmm.
and against Philadelphia, and I was nervous, and I was a little scared with my first game. But I went out there, and once I got on the mound, the game started like any other game. So I was okay, and I happened to shut them out. So I was thrilled about that.
Yeah. But what, just 5 days later, you set a National League record, and I think it still stands today when you pitched a 6-0 shutout again, this time against the Brooklyn Dodgers at Ebbets Field in your second major league start.
Right. I rode over there with Jim Hearn and Sal Negley, and I almost wanted to jump out of that car knowing I was going to pitch against the Dodgers. And so I pitched a 6-0 shutout.
They were a pretty good team. They had some great stars playing for them.
Yeah, they won the pennant that year, and I don't know what they did in the World Series with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see. Well, that was about it. I won the game, and I was excited again from shutting them out. I didn't know much about the Dodgers, though, other than they were a good team.
Yeah. You started the 54 season in Minneapolis and again got called up in July, but this time you started pitching primarily in relief. You then spent the entire 55 season again playing for Minneapolis, and you won 19 games.
Right.
Back in the starting
role. Ringo was a manager there.
I'm sorry?
Bill Rigney was the manager.
Okay. Okay.
1955. Yeah, I won 19. The Giants, I went spring training with the Giants that year, but they didn't want to keep me. I didn't pitch too good for them anyway. So then they sent me to Minneapolis, and I was happy about that.
In 56, you were with the Giants all season, and you were used primarily as a starter. In 57, you again were with the Giants, but now your role seemed to be kind of changing, and you're being used primarily in relief. What changed your role from starter to reliever, and what did you think about it?
Well, I didn't like that idea of relieving. I tried to relieve a couple of times in Minneapolis, but I wasn't relaxed enough. I didn't do a very good job, I didn't think. But in the Little World Series, we played in, I think, 55. I relieved in a number of games. So I guess that's where I got started, relieving. We won the Little World Series that year. And I was drafted by Cincinnati in 1963, before the season started. And they used me primarily in relief.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it really came in relief. I was always, from then on, I was a relief pitcher.
Yeah. Kind of got your career going. After the 57 season, the Giants moved west and became the San Francisco Giants. Actually, back there was some thought that the Giants would move to Minneapolis. What do you remember about the move, and what did you think about it?
we were in 1957, at the end of the season, the last game. There was a lot of people at the game as far as the moving deal.
Sure.
We were all in the clubhouse, and all the people outside hollering, amazed and this and that and other. They wanted to see him, you know, again, knowing we were going to San Francisco. And it was quite a different setting there for a baseball player, knowing that you're already going to move to San Francisco. And, you know, wasn't anything you could do about it. You didn't know if it was good or bad. You're just part of the team. So that's the way we went to San Francisco. And that was a lovely city, beautiful city, most beautiful city I've ever been in.
Really?
Yes. And so we liked to move when we got there.
You pitched pretty well in San Francisco as a reliever in 58 and 59, but in March of 60, the Giants traded you to the Red Sox. What do you remember about that trade?
Well, the reason I was traded was because, we stole signs with binoculars in 59. And I think that at the time we played the Dodgers in the playoffs, and it seemed like there was another team involved there. But the Giants, we played Milwaukee, and we had a man on the scoreboard calling the signs like we had in New York in 1954, calling the signs of the opposing players. And I went in and told Bill Rigney that if we're going to keep stealing signs, I couldn't play on that team because I was a Christian, and that isn't part of the Christian life, stealing signs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he stopped. He stopped. And but we lost to Milwaukee. We lost that day. We called all their signs, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so we finished third that year. I think Milwaukee and the Dodgers were first 1-2, and then we finished third at 57.
The Braves had good teams in 57 and 58.
Yeah, in 58, I didn't have a real good year.
Yeah.
That was the worst year I had in all the years I played.
Well, and that kind of leads me to the next question because, you know, my question was, I think it was in 1958 when you and your wife became born-again Christians, and you're widely credited as being the first baseball player to do so. Can you talk about that?
I sure can. I was saved in the Billy Graham Crusade that came to San Francisco in 1958. I had never heard about a person being saved.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anything about it, so we were invited to go out to the Cow Palace and hear Billy Graham preach. So I've been hearing people preach all my life, see, but I had never heard the gospel preached. And he preached about Jesus dying on the cross for us and his blood paid for our sin. And I sat there and I listened to him, but I didn't really understand that. And the first night there, he gave an invitation to people to come to Christ, and people walked down the aisle. And I looked at those people, and I thought, where are you people going? Don't you know Jesus Christ out here in San Francisco? And if you don't know him, you ought to be going down front. Well, the next night, we went, and the same thing happened. He gave the invitation, and my heart began to pound. It began to beat pretty loud, and I put both my hands up. My heart to keep it quiet because I knew the people sitting around me couldn't hear. My heart was making a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to go down that aisle, and I did. And I stood down at the front, and I walked all the way out of the balcony down to the front main floor. And I told God that I'd come to live for him. I didn't know how, but I was come to live for him. And so they gave us some literature to read, and which really helped me. So they took us into a big room and again showed us how to be, told us how to be saved. And it was a thrilling thing, and I went home. The preacher and his wife had taken a couple of youngsters home, and I got in my house, and they came in. I told the preacher that, or his wife did, said, "Al accepted Christ tonight," and he came over and he shook my hand, congratulated me, and said, "Al had been praying for you," and I looked at him and thought, "What for?" And and I didn't say anything. Jimmy seemed so happy. And the next morning, I woke up, and the Spirit of God lived in me. The Holy Spirit came upon me, and I didn't know the Holy Spirit did that either. And so he made himself real to me. Jesus made himself real to me. And that day, we were leaving to go on about a 70-day road trip. And every time I sat down to worry about something, I jumped right back up. There wasn't anything to worry about. I didn't have anything to worry about. God had taken all my problems and put them on a high shelf, and I couldn't reach them.
Wow.
And so I went out to the airport, and I laughed for about 12 years. I couldn't stop laughing. The Spirit of God lived in me, and he brought me the happiness and peace that Jesus said he'd give. And I got to the airport, and one of the guys said, "Al, let's play cards on the plane." I looked at him and said, "No, I'm not going to be playing cards. Something happened to me, and until I find out what happened to me, I'm not going to do anything." So I got on the plane and started reading my Bible, and God really began to speak to me through the Word. And I never did understand the Bible before, because I wasn't saved. I wasn't a child of God. So this night, my eyes were open, and I could read the Word of God. I could understand it. And I knew that Jesus lived in my heart. And he told me that he let me know that when I died, I was going to go to heaven. So that was wonderful, too.
Boy, that's an interesting experience to go through.
Yeah.
You started the 1960 season with the Red Sox, but within a couple of weeks you were sent down to Minneapolis, which was now a Red Sox AAA team. And
right.
You spent most of the season with the Millers, but then late in the season the Red Sox sent you to the White Sox, where you then pitched for a couple of games.
Uh-huh.
And you spent 61 and 62 in the minors, and then late in 62, the Reds picked you up in the Rule 5 draft. Did you see that as a real opportunity for you?
In 63, yeah, when I went with Cincinnati, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to let you know really what happened in, let's see, 62, I was with Indianapolis. 61, I wanted to quit and just go back home, spend my last year playing out in San Diego where I was at 61. But then at 62, I was in Indianapolis, and I had a good year, won 15, lost 4, and that's when Cincinnati bought my contract. And so I went with them in 1963. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And you spent the entire 63 season with the Reds pitching very well, and you started the 64 season with the Reds, but after a month or so, they sent you down to AAA.
They sure did send me back to San Diego.
Then in go ahead.
I don't know why. I had a good year with the Reds. In fact, I finished 32 games. I didn't know that until somebody looked up on the computer and saw that and told me.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, that's right, in 1960, then they sent me back, and I went back to San Diego and stayed there about a month, then the Minnesota bought me.
Right.
So I'm back up in the again.
Yeah, I think in June the Twins purchased you from the Reds, but I read somewhere that you weren't happy to leave San Diego. You were very happy pitching there.
Well, that's when maybe that's the year that I was going to quit. Mm-hmm. That I was going to play out that season in San Diego, and my wife and I, we had 3 children at the time. And so I just wanted to go back to Alabama and get me a job and work. So,
sure.
But it didn't turn out that way. Mr.
You pitched.
The general manager called me up and told me that Minnesota had bought my contract.
Mm-hmm. You pitched for the Twins between 64 and 69, and you had some excellent seasons. Maybe the best of your career. And in 1968, I think you led the American League in saves with 18.
Right.
Your 88 saves is still sixth on the Twins' all-time save list. Can you share with us some of your memories of your time as a Minnesota Twin?
Well, that was, those were the best years of my baseball career up in Minnesota. And maybe it started from way back when I was with the Millers. I even pitched in my wife's hometown when I was in college, Florida. So Minneapolis was always a favorite place for me, and I had always pitched good there with the Millers. So, maybe I had just kind of had found a home I enjoyed the everything about Minneapolis pitching with the Twins from 64 through 69.
You ended up pitching in the 65 World Series. What was it like to finally get to that point where everyone strives to get to?
Well, pitching in the World Series, playing in it is a big thrill. All the pomp ceremonies that's going on, and all the excitement, all the flags, all the everything, you know, in Minneapolis.
Sure.
And so, when I went in, I didn't get to get in the game in Minneapolis. I had to wait till we went to the L.A. And but it was still excited, just like it was in Minneapolis out there. So when I went in and started pitching, it's just like any other game again. You're pitching, you're in a baseball game, so you don't realize it's a World Series, but in a way, I guess you always will know it.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can do you know, you can go ahead and do your pitching like you always did.
Yeah. You also pitched in a 69 American League Championship Series against the Orioles. What do you remember about the 69 Twins?
Well, I remember that I went in that last game, and Jim Perry had pitched, and he left after the eighth inning, and we had a one-run lead, and I had to go in there and get him out. So that's what I remember about that, but too bad we didn't win the pennant.
Those were some good teams.
Yes, we did. We had some good teams.
The Twins ended up releasing you after the 69 season, and at the age of 40, your career was over after 14 big league seasons and 602 games.
Right.
Were you ready to give up pro baseball at that point in your life?
Well, you know, I had quit after the 68 season. I told them I wasn't coming back, and I quit, and I went home, and I was going to, what was I going to do? I don't know. I was going to get me a job, and I had gone to college, and I had a degree, and so I could go back. I could go to keep teaching and being a baseball coach in a high school or whatever. And so I was kind of content to do that. I'd been pitching all my life, seemed like, and I wanted to do something else. So anyway, we quit after that 1968 season. But here comes maybe February or March, maybe March or April, and Billy Martin had one of the sports writers there in Minnesota, the one that's been out the longest.
Sid Hartman.
Sid called me and asked me to come back. Billy wanted me to come back.
Really?
So, I told Shirley, my wife, and so it kind of excited, and for them to call me and want me, so we went back and we stayed, the 1959 season, 69.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
You played for a number of different managers. Who did you enjoy playing for the most, and why?
Well, I enjoyed playing with Sam Mealy the most because Sam more or less kind of understood me, I guess, and he understood that I had to pitch. I couldn't sit around 5 or 6 days without that pitch. I needed to pitch every other day, or every day, or every third day, not once a week or something like that. So he put me in, and it worked well. Both of us, the way that Sam looked on me and the way I reacted to the way he looked at me as a pitcher, you know.
You played for the Twins when Calvin Griffith owned the team. Can you share with us any stories about Calvin?
Well, let's see. I remember I walked into his office one day, and he said, I said, what was that old saying he had? I don't know. I forgot the saying he had, but when how are you, something like that is different. But anyway, I guess I don't know any stories about Calvin.
Okay.
He treated me well.
How did your contract negotiations work out with Calvin?
Very well.
Really?
Very well, yeah. I may be the only one, but it worked out well with me.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
What pitches did you throw, and what was your best pitch?
Well, my fastball slid. See, I didn't have anything to do with that. God gave me that, and I didn't realize that for years and years that the most right-handed pitcher goes inside to the right-hand. pitcher asked to it, it went away from the right-hander, low and away, and it went into the left-hand hitter. So my ball slid and sunk, my fastball. And I threw that on 3-2, whatever it was, that was my pitch, you know. So that's the reason I could pitch in big leagues, because I had that pitch. If I didn't have that one, I don't guess I could have played.
Well, you ended up throwing a knuckleball at one point in your career, didn't you?
Yeah, but it didn't last very long. I didn't have a good one. It didn't work for me.
After you retired, you were out of baseball for a couple of years, but then you rejoined the Twins as a pitching coach in 72 and 73 under Bill Rigney and Frank Quillici. How much did you enjoy doing that?
Well, I was back home for a couple of years, and I was selling life insurance, but being a Christian, I was called on to speak a lot in schools and a lot of other places, so I was kind of busy telling people about Christ and what he did for me. And after, I don't know, I just had that itch to go back. When Calvin called me, I didn't call him. And he called me and asked me to come back as a pitching coach, and I was kind of happy to do that. So Sharon and I got set, and away we went to Minnesota again.
The road just keeps bringing you back to Minnesota throughout your life.
I held a lot of baseball clinics up in Minnesota, mm-hmm. lots of them. The 2 years that I wasn't there, I went back to Minnesota, and I held most of the time two clinics a day. It was just me. Uh-huh. And this guy, Warren Ruford, he had an itinerary made up for me. And I'd just be in a churchyard or in a park.
Mm-hmm.
And both, you know, when it was two a day, both of them were pretty close together. So I did that for 2 years, and then they called me back to be a pitching coach, so I went back.
Well, after that, you became the first baseball coach for Liberty College, and you were there for like 13 years, and you had a record of 343 wins and 191 losses, which is tremendous. Matter of fact, I think they've named a baseball field there after you.
Yeah, they did.
And then you served as Liberty's athletic director. Your time at Liberty College has to be one of the best times of your life. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, I'm with Minnesota, and this is 1972, right?
Right, 72 and
73. Yeah, 70, 71 and 72. Is that when I was pitching coach or 73? 73. 73, okay. Well, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the baseball again. That was part of my life. Been a big part of my life. But the pitchers at that time were making like $140,000 a year. And, man, that was a lot of money then. And,
sure.
We had never made that much before. And, you know, Stan Musial and Ted Williams, Willie Mays, they made like $100,000, but for the pitchers to make $140,000 a year, amazing them got more than that then. But that was exciting. And but the pitchers, to me, they weren't interested in going to heaven. You know, they weren't interested in knowing Christ as their Savior.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't any use of me staying there. If they didn't want to do that, I had to have my life to mean something. So I called Dr. Falwell over at Liberty University, and he was on his way to, he was out in California when I talked to him, when I left the message. Well, he called me, and I told him I wanted to be the baseball coach at Liberty University if they had a team. And so he told me to come up, and so I went up there and talked to him, and I told my wife, shouldn't ask for a job if you weren't prepared to take it, because he gave it to me. So I went to, after the baseball season in 73, then we moved on over there to Lynchburg, Virginia, and I stayed there 16 and a half years. They were wonderful years. These were the boys that say, sir, and they said, when I'd ask them something, they didn't, or say something to them, they didn't, you know, want to give some kind of why I got to do that, this, that, this, mm-hmm. yes, sir, no, sir. So that was fun for 16 and a half years with those baseball players.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
You also have written a book called I Played and I Won.
Right.
I have not read the book yet, but plan to do so. Can you tell our listeners about the book and why you wrote it?
Well, I wrote the book because I wanted to see somebody saved. I put the plan of salvation in that book a number of times, and like one of the old ball players told me, I called him and he read the book, and he said, if I don't get saved reading your book, then I'm gonna get saved. So that's the reason I wrote the book, for people to be saved. And it told about my baseball career and how when the Lord came to live in my life and saved me, and he'll take me to heaven one of these days.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to get a copy and read that. It sounds like an interesting book.
Good.
But who is the best baseball player that you ever played with?
Willie Mays.
Okay. What made Willie so good?
Well, he just had natural ability. He could run, field, hit, and throw those four things better than any man I saw. So he could do all of those things good, well, better than anybody else.
Okay. The Twins have played indoor baseball at the Metrodome since 1982, and next season will open their new ballpark called Target Field. And the Twins fans will get to enjoy outdoor baseball again.
Right.
You played at the Met Stadium. What are your memories of playing there?
Nothing but joy, just nothing but fun, just nothing but excitement. Those were exciting years, being there with the Twins. The people were excited, and it was all over the air, the excitement of the people in Minnesota over the Twins, and they made it fun for you, and it's just part of my life that I liked.
So what do you do today to stay busy, and what do you really enjoy doing in your spare time?
Well, people wouldn't understand this, but I have kind of like a track ministry.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say this first. I went to Central South America for 16 years. We played softball two games a night. We set up our loudspeaker after the first game and told the people how to be saved. And the response was great. And these players came from Philadelphia and New York and California and wherever. They paid their own way over there, took off from work, and went over there and played softball against these guys to win them to Christ. And so I was there 16 years. And I forgot where we were. Where were we before I started that? What did you ask me?
No, just what you enjoy doing in your spare time.
Oh, yeah. I've got, I don't go over there anymore now, but I've got some tracks that I give to the Spanish people here.
Mm-hmm.
I got four tracks. I put them in one. One is tall. One, put the other three in there, put them rubber band on, and hand it to them. It's all in Spanish. So I want them to go to heaven, too, so... I've got these other tracks that I've been giving out since I got saved. I've given out like 157,000 of them.
Wow.
So that's my ministry there. But I got 28 fruit trees, and I got a garden, and I got blueberry plants, bushes, and blackberry plants, and I got two strawberry trees. Nobody
really?
Heard of a strawberry tree, but they're new now. And so I got all that I take care of, and I have a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, I enjoy. My wife and I enjoy working in the yard too here in Minnesota. Right now it's a little cold out there, but
it's cold here too.
You know, that's what I understand.
Yeah.
Al, I want to thank you so very much for spending this time with us today. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with all your fans back here in Minnesota?
Well, you know, I did speak in a lot of churches in Minnesota, and I would just pray that everybody that I talked to that heard me speak, and even that didn't hear me speak, that they might understand that God loves them, and that He died for them on that cross, and their sins paid for.